Was it the play calling or was it the players? We're here to discuss the Super Bowl and the Chiefs' big victory. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board. This is our wrap-up Super Bowl episode, and I am joined by Big John and our OG guest, Greg Kellogg. Gentlemen, before we get to the game, give me one word to describe the game. Big John.
Profitable. Made a lot of money on that game.
Greg.
Boring.
You're not the first. To me, exciting. I thought it was exciting. No big plays, but the intensity of that fourth quarter in overtime, where that's what makes it a Super Bowl. I saw an article talk about how it was boring because of no big plays. I'm like, yeah, you're right. But that fourth quarter in overtime, boy, maybe it was more exciting to me because I kind of predicted it pretty easily after watching. It was pretty much a repeat of the Ravens game, you know, I thought in certain aspects. But anyway, before we get to that, my friends, this week we're going to talk obviously the Super Bowl. But before we get to the Super Bowl, we're going to talk a little bit about the one hire we did not talk about last week, and that is the San Diego Chargers hiring of Jim Harbaugh. You know, guys, I got to be honest. I'm saying Jim Harbaugh, but I really forget Jim and John. You know, there's no similar, which was which. Before we get to that, everybody, grumblingsmedia.com. You can find this podcast along with our other podcasts, as well as YouTube, Rumble, under the profile name Grumblings Media, and traditional podcast outlets, Apple, Google, Spotify, and Pandora. And with that, gentlemen, let's get to it. But before the Super Bowl, first of all, Greg, your thoughts on the hiring of the San Diego Chargers of Jim Harbaugh, the NCAA champion of the Michigan Wolverines?
I think every team that needed a head coach wished they'd have got him. Not only did San Diego get Jim Harbaugh, which he's won everywhere he's been, but they got Jesse Mentor, who is steeped in the Baltimore Ravens defense. Mike McDonald brought it to Michigan, and then Mentor actually perfected it. He actually added some coverage disguises, coverages, and blitzes that McDonald didn't really do. I think Mentor is going to be an excellent DC, and I'm not sure how much the strength and conditioning coach, Ben Rhodes, will matter in the NFL because those guys are usually pretty buff already. But he was a huge loss for Michigan. I can tell you that. He was a big difference maker. He took 3-star kids and turned them into 5-star players.
I got to be honest, Greg. I do have my 2 cents on that. When I was in high school, I proudly played in the band. I was a hell of a trumpet player. I wrestled, ran cross country, played baseball, but I loved my trumpet. So, and our marching band was a competitive one. We would tour and do contests. I had to preface that with showing that it's not a wussy hobby, you know, but I prefaced that by stating this also. We were so good and our team was so bad for years and years. People would come to watch a halftime show. That's how good we were. Then it changed with this one head coach named Bobby Paas. Bobby Paas retired with like 6 or 7 like state championships. You know, he wasn't cute. But the one thing he incorporated, which I believe in, which I always sit there and talk about the NFL players, is stretching. He brought in a stretcher, like she was like a yoga center, and that team would spend 30 minutes just doing stretch. That team, they didn't go on to win that many state championships, but he always said, they're not going to take care of their bodies. We got to do that because they think they're young and invincible, and they don't understand the process of stretching. Because I asked him this. He goes, young kids do not understand the importance. And that made the world a difference. And then when I started doing fantasy football, you know, with Hot Off the Wire, we just naturally started tracking injuries. We started to learn innately, you know, the length of the injuries, the type of injuries. And I kept asking about stretching, and that's never been incorporated. And then what I always came across, not every single time, but a good 40 to 60%, depending what season, was the one comment, they're grown men. They know what they need to do. I'm like, no, they're not grown men. They're young men out of college, you know? And I just think that is one thing with the strength and conditioning. That's a low-hanging fruit. that starts the path to greatness. And so I do think it is important, Greg, and I do think that's who Jim Harbaugh is. He puts so much focus on those little details, and I always try to tell people, that, and I told John and I have had this conversation, the difference between great and greatness. There's a lot of great players, but greatness is transcending from the great players. Patrick Mahomes is on his way to becoming greatness, if not already there by some measures. And I think it all starts with that low-hanging fruit, as do a lot of people. You talk to them about that. It's that discipline, that focus. I think that's going to make a major difference. John, your thoughts?
Not on what I said, but
just in general. Just in general, on the hiring.
I'm a little bit confused. We started with Harbaugh, then we somehow ended up at yoga. So I'm not quite sure where we're going.
My point is, it's the little details. You understand the importance of stretching, of weightlifting, and all that. That's how it begins. What are your thoughts on the hiring in general?
Well, I mean, look, Harbaugh has a proven track record of success. So obviously he's a hot candidate. And he comes, you know, I'm sure people are also associating him with his brother's success as well. So I think it was a solid hire, you know. Like, I mean, will his act play well? Who knows, you know? And I'm interested in seeing what he sees, what he has in mind for San Diego, particularly the offense. You know, like, I mean, he was obviously a former quarterback himself, NFL quarterback himself. So it's going to be interesting to see how Justin Herbert will now perform under Harbaugh's leadership. So is he going to explode and be somebody who throws for 5,000 yards, or is he going to actually make him a little bit more restrained in order to get a more balanced offense? You know, and obviously, I would think, being a good Michigan man, he's going to probably start building the trenches both ways, you know, from the middle out. So I think it'll be interesting to see what his stamp is going to be on this team. But, you know, in terms of resumes, you know, the Chargers probably couldn't have done it much better than they did.
Right. No, I agree. I have to say this, though, about his resume. His resume is beyond anybody else's right now. You know, obviously he went 89-25 with the Michigan Wolverines, 8 bowl games, 6 seasons with 10-plus wins, 2021 AP College Football Coach of the Year, 3 Big 10 titles, and obviously the national championship. That's what most people are remembering him about. Here's what most people have forgotten.
Nine seasons, though.
There were 4 straight Ohio losses, and they wanted to fire him. Yeah. But you're right. He did come back at the end of the day. Yes, exactly. Now, here's what people have forgotten that I want to mention, and I don't want to spend too much time, but this is important to me. From 2011 to 2014, he went 44-19-1 as the Niners head coach. 3 straight championship games and a Super Bowl loss in 2012. Before all this, he turned the USD Toreros joke of a football team into a winning franchise, which he also got Josh Johnson as a career backup, had a long career in the NFL, and the Stanford Cardinals, he was a winner. But my whole point, 44-19-1, 3 state championship games, we've forgotten that. This guy is not only a winner, he is a winner's winner. And I think with the San Diego Chargers, they finally have a coach that can actually get them to the Super Bowl and win it. And God bless Bobby Ross. Georgia Tech was national champions. So he had a national championship and took the Chargers to the Super Bowl. But that team was riding Lady Luck that season and were exposed in the Super Bowl to a team that was just much better. And I'm not saying it, I'm just saying he took them as far as they could. I think Jim Harbaugh can create a Niners team out of the Chargers, can create a Kansas City Chiefs. And it all starts because of Justin Herbert. They got the quarterback now that he can turn into from a pajama boy man into an actual man. Because I see a lot of pajama boy. When the pressure's on Herbert, he tends to kind of come up with the L more than he does W's. And that's not me stating that. The record says that. Greg, you're shaking your head.
Harbaugh's a run-first guy. To get Herbert where we want to see Herbert, if they don't re-sign Eckler, they've got to get a running back, and they've got to have the interior line to run. Because even in San Francisco, Harbaugh ran more than the average in the NFL.
Correct.
Now, will he run as much as he did at Michigan? No, there's no way he can do that. Just can't do it in the NFL. But he's going to emphasize the run. I look at like Dan Campbell is a good example of what Jim Harbaugh is going to want to do. I don't know that he's going to have you know, the Pony Express, the two-back attack that Dan does. But I think he's going to emphasize the run and play action. So I think Herbert's going to have a good year, John.
Look, he's got enough talent on that team, obviously. I mean, there are some trouble spots. I mean, you have to keep an eye on the wide receiver corps because I think the bottom may fall out of that.
Yes.
Very quickly. I mean, Keenan Allen is on the wrong side of 30, although he had a fantastic season last year. Mike Williams is talented, but he's always hurt, so I don't know how much you could count on him. And the rookie they drafted, Quentin Johnson, really didn't show me much. The tight end is not a great position for them. So I don't know. What do they do at that number five pick? You know, do they go with the tight end out of Georgia, who's a very highly rated tight end prospect? Some say better, one of the best ones in the last 10, 20 years. Do they go offensive line? There's a couple of, like, maybe that kid out of Notre Dame, Alt, I think. You know, do you draft someone like him? So, you know, there's a lot of different ways. And I think it'll be interesting to see. Look, Bill Parcells was a running football coach until he had Drew Bledsoe. Then he became a passing coach, right? A pass first
coach. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Right. A good coach will always adapt to the talent around him. And, you know, good coaches fit the players – adapt their system for the talent they have, not the other way around, right? So a really good coach is able to adapt. So, yes, Harbaugh was a run-first coach in Michigan. He was a run-first coach initially. Did he have Kaepernick in that situation?
Yes,
he did.
Yes, he brought Kaepernick to fame, and Kaepernick was a Super Bowl quarterback.
So that skews the running numbers as well.
When you talk Brock Bowers, remember also in this year's draft is a kid named Eric Aul. Now, Eric Aul finished his career at Iowa, which is known for producing tight ends.
Tight end U.
But he started his career at Michigan under Jim Harbaugh, so Harbaugh's very aware of his talent level.
Right. Okay, so you're saying it might be a later –
there's options later in the draft to get a tight end up.
You know, I think you're both right. I think you adapt with the players. He's going to adapt with the players he has right now, but he's slowly going to form the team he wants in a couple of seasons. John, you're spectacular there. I mean, I'm like looking at my notes that you haven't seen, and you're just repeating, you know, Khalil Mack, 33 years old, 17 sacks. Many were against bad teams. C. Von Miller, Joey Bosa, 14 games in two seasons, 36.7 cap space. Khalil Mack is a 38.5 cap space. Keenan Allen, 34.7 cap space. Enters 2024, 32 years old. Mike Williams, torn ACL, $32.5 million. Ridding themselves of these players could free up $35 million, or will put them $35 million under the cap. Right now, they are $27.5 million over the salary cap. They're projected to be $45 million because they need money to sign their draft class. You know, they're projected to be $45.8 million over the cap, but they're going to need $55.4 million to sign a draft class. I think he will adapt to Justin Herbert and Greg. When I say he's got Justin Herbert, I'm not saying he's got the next great number one overall gunslinger who's going to throw up all these records. He has a quarterback who, he has to carry the team, has the talent to carry the team, and that's what he's got to groom out of Justin Herbert. He can keep his rushing attack. He can keep his game. But when called upon, doesn't matter what – because, look, Lamar Jackson is the epitome. I don't know the style of schemes they have, but in concept, same thing. The other Harbaugh runs that power rushing attack. But when it was called upon for Lamar Jackson to put that team on his back, he failed. And I think that's what he's got to grow and cool out of Justin Herbert. And he can have his power rushing attack, too. He can have both his cake. He can have his cake and eat it, too.
Herbert's one of the few quarterbacks in NFL history that had 30 passing touchdowns as a rookie. That just doesn't happen very often. And Herbert did it. I think Harbaugh is going to be very good for Justin Herbert. I really do.
Oh, and I'm in agreement. What I'm just telling you, he's got to mature the kid. Look, this is my issue with people who throw numbers. You got to put it in context. What was their record that rookie year? What was, you know, it's all in context. My point is he has that talent. He's got to grow that talent from the cerebral. All right, guys. John, any final comments before final comments, and then we'll move on.
Nope. I don't have much else to say,
No, I think we've beat this horse.
That's true. Now, they're hoping to beat the championship horse one year. Let us move on. And congrats to Jim Harbaugh. A winner wherever he's gone. I expect the same from him with the Chargers. Whether they make the Super Bowl or not, they'll be contenders now.
Now, let's move on. Lost two in the Super Bowl? Before
his brother. His brother, right. John. You know? And who was the Super Bowl MVP there who came out of nowhere this year to have a spectacular second half?
I have no idea.
Flacco. Joe Flacco was his okay. Super Bowl. It was his quarterback. Yeah.
Comeback player of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. No. He wasn't comeback player of the year.
He should have been.
Yeah.
Hamlin?
You're right.
Was it Hamlin?
Hamlin.
Hamlin shouldn't have been. Hamlin only played like 17 snaps.
Exactly. The only reason Hamlin's on the roster still is they don't want to cut him and get the pushback. Exactly. That's the only reason. So I thought it was a joke. All that did was validate Hub Arco. So I'm not going to vote for Aaron Rodgers, not because of football, but because I don't agree with his COVID stance. You know?
Yeah.
All it does is hurt the prestige. All right, guys. The Super Bowl. First of all, we got your one-word thoughts on it. Greg. What entering this game, what did you think was going to be the key, and did you see that fulfilled or not?
I did not. I thought Pacheco was going to run wild, running between the guards, outside shoulder to the left guard, outside shoulder to the right guard. That's where Detroit owned San Francisco. And if you go back and look at the replay, when they ran straight ahead, Pacheco had 10-yard runs. Pacheco did very well between the guards. But they kept running counters and outside. It was like Andy Reid didn't watch any tape on the prior two San Francisco games. Now, he has, how do I say this? I think the best player on the field was Christian McCaffrey. But I think the most impactful player on the field was Reid's quarterback. I think Pat Mahomes. He impacts games. He may not be the most athletic guy, but he does what it takes to win.
John, what was your thought going into the game that would happen to be a key factor, and did you see it happen or not?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I think when we talked about it last week, which team has the best quarterback? The Chiefs. Which team has the better defense? The Chiefs. Who has the better coach? The Chiefs. Those are the three things I needed to know. That's, and I put my money where my mouth was on the game because that's exactly the way it happened. Now, I am a little bit surprised that what I thought would be the key to keeping the game close and giving San Francisco a shot. And let's preface this. I don't view the game as harshly as you guys did. I thought it was an entertaining game. I don't think there were major screw-ups on either side of the ball. By either coach. I think there were things that could have been done better, but hindsight is 20/20. But the one thing that I think that was glaring was the lack of commitment to the running game by the 49ers. I think they had the Chiefs tired, especially, I mean, the Chiefs defense, I don't know the exact time of possession numbers. It seemed to me like the Chiefs defense was on the field a lot more than the Niners defense was on the field. They were gassed. I don't think they sacked Purdy, did they? They didn't get to Purdy the whole game, which is rare. I could be wrong about that, but I just don't remember any sacks.
I remember one. I think Chris Jones got one, to be honest.
No, because I had played.
Chris Jones got – no, he didn't get one. He had pressure in the overtime. Right.
Yeah, he had a pressure, yeah, because I had – the reason I know this, I had a prop bet on Chris Jones to get one sack. And that did not pay off for me. So that's how I know for sure. But here's the thing. The defense of the Chiefs did a great job. But I think had they stuck with McCaffrey and even Mitchell, even mix in Deebo Samuel on the ground, patience, they would have won that game because the poor Chiefs defense, especially in the first half, would have been run ragged. I think the lack of commitment to that was key. The second thing, which, I had some friends over for the Super Bowl, were watching the game, and in the second half, you could immediately see what the Niners were doing defensively. They were not going to let Travis Kelce beat them. And in doing so, they were playing very tight up against the line, so Pacheco, even though he had some success, he really couldn't get going. And I turned to my friends and I said, you know how you break this type of defense? Mahomes has to start scrambling. Do a couple of RPOs because now if you the way you react is either going to be you put a spy on him, which means you free up Kelce to work the middle of the field, or B, you're going to let Mahomes run for 10, 12, 15 yards every time he takes off. And we saw that in the fourth quarter, and we especially saw that in the overtime, where it was Mahomes with his legs that was the difference, in my opinion. That fourth and one play, hats off. You got to have steel cojones to run a quarterback sweep against that defense on fourth and one with the Super Bowl on the line in overtime. So gutsy call, but it worked. So yeah, it pretty much played out the way I thought it would, except I was disappointed that we didn't see more of Christian McCaffrey and Elijah Mitchell and Deebo Samuel out of the backfield, just putting it down the Chiefs' throat like that.
John, real quick, I apologize. You need to shut your other tabs that have Riverside open, please.
It's okay.
Well, he's doing that. I want to say Christian McCaffrey had 160 yards, didn't he? It seems like at one point he had 80 yards rushing and 84 receiving. So
yeah, but I think it was more the idea that if you're running, you're running between, like you said, you're running the ball. It's a lot more physically taxing on the defense.
It is.
Than those wheel routes or those little screen passes or something. And it's also demoralizing, Greg. You know that as well as I do. There's nothing more demoralizing than an offensive line pushing those big defensive brutes out of the way, right? So,
yep.
Again, this is when I talk
straight runs. Yeah.
This is what I talk about when I talk about you got to look at it in context. And John's absolutely correct on that sense. I don't want to forget because I didn't put it in my notes, but the one play that truly irritated me was the second down play in overtime when they're on the 5-yard line, the Niners. And it was obvious McCaffrey was gassed. They were using him every play. And he got sacked for a loss. And to me, that's like, aren't you coaches thinking out there? And I've heard analysts in the past and players talk about this, that sometimes the coaches forget, man, we're gassed, and they caught just me for another play. So what do you do? It was Ricky Waters. So they say, well, Rick, what'd you do? Give me the damn ball. I don't care if I'm gassed, you know? So McCaffrey probably wanted the ball. But that showed me that the coaches weren't in sync with what needed to be done. And then the sit there, Steve Spagnuolo really destroyed him on the following play with Chris Jones coming up and not even being touched. You know, and that rushed Purdy because Ayuk was open and there was somebody else open as well or was getting open. And that, to me, was one of the plays of the game. But my question going in is, the coaching staff. I said Shanahan, but when I say Shanahan, I'm talking about that coaching staff because I remember the Buffalo games and their defensive coordinator with that 13-second debacle. Steve Wilks has struggled all game. I've been covering all 32 teams. I've watched at least 70% of the games, not, you know, commercials, all that, the rewind. And the one thing, and Eddie and I would talk about it, was the Niners' defense, you know, how it was hit and miss, how it was sporadic, how it wasn't playing well. And they did a pretty good job in the first three quarters. But you saw the Chiefs starting to make their own adjustments for coming through in that second half. And I saw no adjustments from Shanahan and especially Steve Wilks. And as I told you guys off camera, you got to have a spy on a mobile quarterback in the biggest game of everybody's career. And the Ravens in the championship failed to do that. And the Niners failed to do that with Mahomes. Again, Mahomes is like John Elway. He will stay in that pocket. He'll scramble sporadically. But when it's the fourth quarter and that game is on the line, he says, bleep y'all. And that's when you see him scrambling and running for his life, believing every yard is that important. And that's what makes Mahomes great. That's what's transcending him from being great to greatness. He's doing it at the clutch moments. And at the end of the day, Spagnuolo put a spy on Purdy and shut him down on a couple of potential runs there. And that brilliant play in overtime to force them to kick the extra point. But the reason it played out as I thought it would, which I was hoping it wouldn't, came in a way I never thought possible. My concern was with the play calling on the field, which I thought Steve Wilks should never be considered for a head coaching job unless he gets over this hump eventually. And here's the kicker that you guys may not realize. Kyle Shanahan had issues with Wilks earlier in the season, and earlier in that game had overridden one of his calls. It was a bad call, you know, that he had made. He said, no, you're not. We're not doing that. He called a timeout in the Super Bowl. They go, we're not running that play. And on the flip side, Steve Spagnuolo knew what to do. But what hit me from out of nowhere was his lack of understanding what the overtime rules. Now, guys, and Greg knows this, I was in the military. My life was in danger a couple of times. You either know it or die, or you make sure there's somebody on your staff that does know it. Period. End of story. There is no middle ground. And I try to tell John, that's the difference between civilians and the military. We bleep up, we die. In the civilian world, you don't. So the consequences are completely different. Your mindset is completely different, how you look at it. To me, as an owner, I'm not going to be stupid saying, you fired this guy, that guy. But I'm like, what the hell with the overtime and choosing to receive the ball in overtime? Knowing you would get it regardless, because when you get it after that opening drive, you know what you have to stand up against, a touchdown, a field goal, or whatnot. And that affects how you strategically call your game. And so for the 49ers to take the ball in overtime was inexcusable because they didn't know the rules. And that's kind of what they've admitted.
I take a bit of exception with a couple things.
Take it all you want, brother.
Okay. So, first of all, I don't think you spy a quarterback like Purdy. Because he doesn't run every game. I think
he
had three carries in this game. Three. One was for 9 yards. One was for 4 yards. And one was a kneel down at the end of the game. At the end of
regulation. Right, but they also stopped him on a couple of plays rushing.
You take a spy, you're taking a guy off Kittle. Now, where I thought the mistake was, they didn't go to Kittle. If they're spying him, you go to Kittle. He's one of the best receiving tight ends in the league, and they just didn't use him at all. Now, also, not knowing, I agree with you entirely. The 49ers players came out after the game and said they didn't know the new rules. That's inexcusable. Okay, first of all, the referees always go over the rule changes every preseason with every team. They have clinics they put on to explain the new rules. And I'm quite certain that if the players didn't know, it's because the coaches didn't emphasize it. So that's a coaching problem in my mind. And as to taking the ball first, I don't think that's necessarily a bad strategy, because if they go down and they score a touchdown on that drive, then yes, they got to go. Even a field goal, they knew they had to go for it on fourth down. Fourth and one, you know, if there's no score in the overtime and you know you can punt it and get the ball back, you probably punt it. But since you know you got to score at least a field goal, you go for it on fourth and one. So, yes, you do get a slight advantage going second, but that can be turned around if the offense, if you think your offense is primed to go down and score, then I can understand taking the ball first. That said, it didn't work out because, you know, Mahomes is Mahomes. He converted a fourth and one.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of this. Oh, man, you know, no, I don't think that cost them the game at all.
Oh, yes, it did. That was a critical run on fourth and one. What are you talking about?
No.
That play where he scrambled on fourth and one? Come on.
No,
that was the game right there.
That's not what he's saying.
That's not what I said, William. What I said was taking the ball initially, receiving the overtime kickoff, did not cost them the game. Like,
I thought you were talking about spying.
No.
Gotcha.
That did not cost them the game. What cost them the game was two things. One, they didn't score a touchdown when they were in, like, first and goal in overtime. They didn't score a touchdown. That was the biggest mistake they had, right? Because they score a touchdown, that means the only option left for the Chiefs is to score a touchdown, which they did anyway, but it's under a different circumstance now, right? The pressure's a little bit off. You know you only need a field goal. So, strategically and pressure-wise, right? The second thing is, after kicking the field goal, which, all right, you went up, so now you still put some pressure on the Chiefs. After kicking the field goal, they just didn't hold up. And to the point of, that's when Mahomes decided to say, oh, or whether it was Reed, Mahomes, or a combination of both, oh, now's the time when I get to use my legs. Now, when they haven't seen it all game, is when I break out the quarterback sweep or the quarterback off tackle. This is when I take off on 19-yard scramble to get me down to the, 15-yard line. I don't blame Wilkes necessarily. You're going up against the best quarterback in the NFL, in my opinion. You're going up against Patrick Mahomes. who in the season, if there was a season when you could say this is the season Mahomes, we stop him, this would have been it, right? He doesn't have the talent around him for the most part that he's had in previous seasons. He lost his offensive coordinator that he had since he was a rookie. So this would have been the season, but he persevered. He carried that team for the most part. Yes, the defense gets a lot of credit for that Super Bowl win, but I'm less harsh on Shanahan for the overtime decisions. I'm less harsh on that. I'm also less harsh on Wilkes. Wilkes' defense did a tremendous job on the Chiefs that whole game. I mean, the first half, holding them to 3 points, amazing job. And the fact that those 3 points came in, what, with 20 seconds left in the first half? I mean, that is an amazing defensive job by the Niners in the first half. And it's just that my rule of thumb, if Patrick Mahomes is within one score in the fourth quarter, he's winning the game because that's his character. So I think it was a well-coached game. I know you tend to be a lot more critical than I am in these situations.
Yes.
But John, I don't think it was that bad. I don't think it was that bad a game call by Wilkes. I don't think it was that bad a game call by Shanahan. I do agree with Greg. And again, I kind of said this last week. The key to victory was the running game and Kittle. The fact that they didn't go to Kittle kind of surprised me. Now, I understand they've been keeping them in all season to support a shaky offensive line.
Yeah.
Right? So I get that piece of it. But if you're not running the ball anyway as much as you should have, then Kittle should have been working the middle of the field.
Well, they couldn't. But that's just it, John. They couldn't because they needed Kittle to give him the time to throw. So I don't understand what you mean by that.
I don't
know.
Dude,
even Kittle has said that. Kittle has said, they're going to use me to block because they need me to block. I'm there for that. He's an awesome guy.
Well, understood. He's a team guy, William.
Right.
He's
understood.
Not going to complain about how the coach.
Well, that's what I just said. He's a team guy, but you can look between the lines. Hold on. I've seen him interviewed. He talks. He speaks his mind. He's never been afraid of that.
He does, but he doesn't throw his coaches under the bus. I've never seen him do that. Any of his.
I got to be honest. I haven't seen many 49er players throw any of the coaching staff on the bus.
You talk about Wilkes calling a good game. I got to tell you, on that fourth and one, that was the time to blitz. That was the time to do an all-out
spy or blitz.
You do pressure, man-on-man pressure, and you send everybody. The difference in my mind was on third and goal when the 49ers were on, what, the five-yard line or something? Spags sent the house. He sent everybody, and Purdy had no time to find a receiver. I think he had somebody open. He just
Jennings.
Couldn't get
the ball. He had Jennings in the front corner of the end zone.
Right.
And that's when Jones was literally in his face.
Because they sent everybody. And then on fourth and one, and when they got down close to the goal line, Wilkes did not blitz.
Yeah, but situationally, Greg, you're right.
But hold on. I have an answer for that. Shanahan had countered him on a blitz. He said it was the worst. Not Shanahan didn't say it, but the analyst was like, yeah, it's a good thing Shanahan called the timeout because that was a terrible blitz call that he had set up to go there. He may have been
different situations, William.
No, it doesn't matter. You're missing my point. My point is simple. He may have been shaken by that and may have been a little leery at his play calling after that. See, that's what look at things in context. Look at him in context. I'm not yelling at you guys. It's my emotion. Look at it in context. It's like, John, you're right. Prior to the fourth, I had it here. The 49ers held Kansas City to 222 yards on 47 plays, forced 5 punts, a fumble, and an interception, allowing 1 touchdown and 2 field goals. That was first 3 quarters. But all that shit doesn't matter. What matters is at the end of the game, the scoreboard, and the chess match that was happening, which means every play is unto itself. And in the play account, just like Greg said, brilliant. He should have blitzed or had a guy covering him on that fourth and one. It comes down to a chess match, and that's how you judge these people. I'm not being harsh. I'm just looking at it and analyzing it. I may sound harsh, but you're right. First 3 quarters, brilliant. Maybe he was shaken up after Shanahan called the timeout and said, you're not running that play. That's a bad play. And maybe that shook Wilkes up. But in the fourth quarter and overtime, the Chiefs total 208 yards, 36 plays, 5.7 yards per play, scored a touchdown, and 2 field goals on the drives.
Yeah, those are 11 plays. William, if that shook him up, he shouldn't be the DC.
Well, no.
I'm not saying it did. I'm just saying that's a possibility. Maybe that happened. But the point is, he didn't call the blitz or have somebody spying Mahomes there.
Hold on. It's not as easy as you guys think, as you guys are making it.
Oh, it never is, John. I mean, we know that.
So here's the thing. Greg, I disagree with you that they should have blitzed on fourth and one, because at that point, don't forget, if you're the Niners at that point, you hold the Chiefs to a field goal. Now your offense has the ball back, and a field goal wins the game, right?
Right.
Fourth and one, you send the house, and you don't get there. And with Mahomes, you know he could get rid of that ball. It's going to the house, right? You do, like, you know.
Well, they don't
That's why you blitz. You're going for it all.
But no, I mean, you're right. It's a chess match.
Well, hold on. First of all, John, that's a what-if scenario.
Wait a second, William. This whole conversation's what if. You can't just call my
But you're saying they shouldn't have blitz because of that. You can't call the play on a potential what if like that, because Mahomes can beat you with both the legs and the pass, and a blitz would nullify that. Hold on.
I'm saying it's different situations, right? Spagnuolo could blitz at when they brought the pressure and it caused the miss to Jennings. Spagnuolo can blitz in that situation because whether he gives up a field goal or whether he gives up a touchdown, you still got Mahomes who's getting the ball back. In the Niners situation, you give up the touchdown on a cover zero, the game is over. Whereas if you give up a first down, the game continues, which is what happened. No, I understand.
But that was what the blitz was calling. Yeah, but that's the blitz he was calling.
But I go after him. I go after him hard.
No, and listen, I'm not saying that wouldn't have worked. I'm just saying the context was different, right?
Yeah, it is.
And then the other thing is, wait a second, one more thing that I haven't heard, but I think is critical. We mentioned Dre Greenlaw earlier getting hurt.
Running onto
the field. Now, do you know who his replacement was? Greenlaw's replacement? Exactly. Nobody knows the kid's name. I know his number, 48. Do you know why? I saw it chasing a lot of Travis Kelce and Rasheen Rice across the middle. The Chiefs weren't stupid. They knew Greenlaw was out. Greenlaw is their best cover linebacker, as well as being a hard hitter. Right? So now the whole spy game is out the window, because Greenlaw would have been the spy.
Right. And Andy Reid brought that up.
Right? Greenlaw, oh, did he? I didn't know that. But
he brought up that they started going after
Whoever 48 was, I don't know the kid's name, but whoever 48 was, I saw a lot of the back of his jersey chasing guys. And with Greenlaw was smacking guys coming across the middle. Like, I'm sure Travis Kelce didn't like doing that, right?
You're right, John. And to top it off, they were starting the fall. The Niners were getting injured throughout the game, and when Greenlaw went down, that was massive. I used to chastise Eddie, because Eddie's a big Niners fan. I said, look, Eddie, my problem with the Niners is when they lose key players, they don't have the depth to sit there and make up for it. And that's what John is saying here, and I agree with it. You're stuck, though. We can look at it in context, and you're right. What about is them, or they should have or could have done this? But most analysts, and I hate saying this, but agree with Greg, and as I was watching the game, my take was have a spy on him, you know, or blitz. I didn't think blitz right away, but John, you brought up a great point. The play that Shanahan said, time out, you're not running that dumb mother bleeping play, was a cover zero blitz. You know, so Greg is right in the sense, well, you don't call a cover zero blitz here, but I'm not into football that in depth that I don't know if every blitz he called was a cover zero blitz. My assumption is they would have been different based on what the context of the play and situation they were in, because Greg is right. You don't call a cover zero blitz.
It depends on who they send and how many people they send. Okay, a cover zero blitz means you're man to man across the board. That's all it means. There's no safety help, which means you're sending the safeties because you're man-to-man across the board. But you can
send
a fifth or a sixth guy, and that's still a blitz.
Or a run blitz.
That's my point. My point is, you rush him. You get him off balance. You do whatever you do, but you don't let him freaking run, because as John says, the fourth quarter, one touchdown, it's Mahomes' game. And that's because Mahomes and Elway have that same mentality. Give me the damn ball. Because Elway he said this publicly about Dan Reeves. He loathed Dan Reeves. And part of the reason was Dan Reeves plays this conservative game. And in the fourth quarter, he asked me to win it. And he doesn't care what my body has to go through. That was one of Elway's biggest knocks. And that's what Andy Reid has done more than once this year to Patrick Mahomes. But in this case, Patrick Mahomes, and not in this case, in every case, Patrick Mahomes. My knowledge is not that in-depth. So when I sit there and say a spy, what I'm really referring to is you got to have somebody in that play on Mahomes, or the play is Greg style to be a blitz. And that's Wilkes got completely out-coached in the fourth quarter. Do you see the stats? I mean, that's not – those stats look are night Travis, and day.
William, look at Travis Kelce first half versus second half.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But see, the thing with Travis Kelce, he made those clutch plays.
In the second half.
Yeah.
When was Greenlaw out?
No, yeah, that's no. Greenlaw went out in the first quarter or second quarter?
You can't spy if they're using Kelce. John's right. They got to keep a second guy on Kelce. Because even with the second guy on Kelce, because Greenlaw wasn't one of those guys, Kelce, what'd he catch, 8 passes for like 80 yards, 90 yards?
Yeah, but you're missing the point. You're missing the point. Spagnuolo knew when to blitz and called the right play. That's what I'm trying to say. Steve Wilkes did it. Steve Wilkes did it, and he failed. You're right. Outside of the bounty gate, I think – is he the one with the bounty gate? Was he the one with the bounty gate issue?
I don't know.
With the Saints?
No, it wasn't him. That was Williams. That was Greg Williams.
Okay, gotcha. But the point is, he knew when the blitz. That's what I mean by it's a chess game. People say you're too harsh. No. There's a loser, there's a winner. And there's a winner. And they both make good and bad plays, but when it counted, the winner made the most important play. And that's what I'm referring to. People just like to generalize too many times.
Well,
this was the biggest
John's
game.
Right,
mentally,
right.
It's a different game.
That's where John's right.
Not at all. Not in that game.
Made the plays. Who made the
plays? Oh, yes. I'm a Mahomes. Yes. You're absolutely right. Yes. No. John, you are absolutely correct. But I mean, in general, the defense of Steve Wilkes, there is no defense. He was outcoached, outclassed when it counted. It's kind of like the Buffalo 13-second. 13 seconds, man, and you're playing way off, you know. So, and there's no underestimating Patrick Mahomes. He's been around the league too long. I think this boy, you don't fire Mike Shanahan. I'm sorry, Kyle Shanahan. But maybe daddy has to have a talk with him. But you don't fire him, but you have to ask the question this year.
Why would
can he get us to win the Super Bowl?
That took their team to the Super Bowl.
You don't. But there comes a point where you have a window and you wonder these questions. You know, so for example, maybe Kyle Shanahan needs to give up the play calling. You know, what I'm saying is you have to look at the coaching staff. What can we do to fix this? We've been in too many big games and not won them. Where we'll get him next time because we're running out of next times. We have salary cap issues. We have team issues.
Was the offense the problem?
The play calling was, but the defense was beat up throughout the year, and the defense is what collapsed there in the fourth. And that's what I say. I tweeted out multiple times. This isn't as much on Kyle Shanahan as I think it's on Steve Wilkes. But again, you guys brought this to my mind because this happens in real life. It doesn't matter what situation you're in, especially in the military, Greg, as I'm sure you see. It's easy to rattle a kid into not making the right decision because they're thinking of the bad decision they made. And I wonder if that was in Steve Wilkes' mind when he chose not to blitz on that fourth and one because Shanahan had called a timeout earlier in the game. I mean, one never knows.
Even if it was, they'll never admit it.
Oh, of course not. But in analyzing the game, I don't look about absolutes. I believe I'm pretty much right, but I'm not saying I am right because John brought up great points, you brought up great points. So in the analyzation game, again, I look at it from the military. You got to analyze every piece so you can live next time and not die this time. In this case, it's a winning and losing. And you're right, Shanahan, and that's why I said you don't fire Shanahan because he's a winning coach. But you've got to start looking at it from the perspective of what can we do to get Shanahan over that hump? Because that's what it boils down to now. And I don't know, do you guys think Steve Wilkes, when I read that about Shanahan, and this wasn't the first time this season he's done this, it makes me wonder if Steve Wilkes will be around next year as a defensive coordinator. They don't need a scapegoat. This was a game the players laid it on the field. But they knew that they do need to tweak their team. Again, I was shocked at how inconsistent the Niners could be from week to week on defense. And a lot of that had to do with injuries. But they also caught a player-only meeting with Wilkes to hammer out that offense when they were struggling. So it makes me wonder the hiring process, because I don't know if Steve Wilks was similar to D'Amico. Man, the one thing I did think about before we had this conversation was, I don't know, but it's easy to say because the grass is always green on the other side. If D'Amico Ryans had been the defensive coordinator in that game, do you think he would have been a difference maker? Or do you think it's they're both interchangeable, those two defensive coordinators, Greg? Tough question.
It's hard to say. I'm not going to guess. D'Amico Ryans was a great defender, but I don't know how good of a defensive coach he is. I really don't.
John?
I haven't studied him.
No, I understand, John.
I think the Niners have been spoiled. I think you've been spoiled. I think when you're coming off Robert Saleh as your defensive coordinator, and then you're coming off D'Amico Ryans as the next defensive coordinator, you've had a streak of two really good defensive coordinators, obviously, since they both went on to become head coaches, off the strength of that. I think Wilks did just fine. I think, you know, was he the best defensive coordinator on the field? No, Spagnuolo was. But Spags has had that reputation now for a decade, like going back to the Giants, going back to the Eagles. So it's not like, you know, you're dealing with a seasoned defensive coordinator who apparently has given up on his head coaching dreams. I think he's just happy being the DC for the Chiefs right now. And he has been
right
for at least the last 5-6 years. I haven't heard his name in being circulated for too many coaching openings, which you figured he might have been, especially after this season. Like, I mean, he had a the Chiefs defense was like number three overall, I think, and playing a lot of rookies. And, you know, a lot of first and second year players. He did an amazing job this year with that team. So I think it was a game where you had two good defensive coordinators. I think the injury to Greenlaw was huge in a lot of different ways. Now, it didn't cripple them exactly. Don't get me wrong. It didn't cripple them when he was out in the second half. But it did cause them to change their defense. They had to be a little more conservative, more zone, less man. The few times they went man, you saw what happened with Kelsey. You saw what happened
right
with Rice. Don't forget, Rice had two big catches in the fourth quarter.
Rasheed
in overtime.
Rice had the fourth right, and 13, or third and 13, yeah.
Both on slants running from, let's see, it would have been right to left
to
I
right
think. Left to right.
Yeah.
So, and who did he pick? Who was supposed to pick him up both times? Number 48, whoever
48,
that is.
Yeah.
The guy who
replaced
Greenlaw.
Oh, no. When Green, see, I looked at it from that perspective, but honestly, in those games, the talent is already there on the field. So I looked at it, oh, God, they're losing one of their biggest in crunch times, the guy who's going to get in, the guy who's going to rally the team. Greenlaw is one of a couple of players like that. And I
very
also saw
yeah
that loss, you
very
know, in a sense,
yeah,
when they're down. You know, see, so I, again, when I analyze the game, I look at it from various perspectives, not just on the field. I look from the play calling, the players. We've all been in that situation, never at this level, but it's always the same. It's just at a different level. And losing Greenlaw, I thought, hurt just as much off the field and being that team leader as it did, or I think more on the field, but it was a big dynamic too. Sometimes you need that guy to just lean on to sit there and tell you, hey, we can do this. Real quick, Greg, you want to say something here before
yeah,
I go to my next question?
It breaks my heart to say this because I'm a Michigan man. We wouldn't even be having this discussion if Moody had kicked that extra point a foot higher.
Oh, what a change. Right. You're right. And then they blamed him, and I'm not a big kicker
yeah
of that, so
that's
I accept
why I didn't
it
want to say it.
Yeah. I don't know the intricacies of kicking. I know I tried to kick, and it barely went 10 yards up high, which made me give respect to the worst kickers in the league and defend them. Yeah, y'all always rag on it's the combine. I got
he
an,
got 250 yarders. Moody got 250
yeah, but that's
yarders
my point. How did he miss extra point?
Well, hold on.
It was blocked.
How?
He didn't get it
blocked
enough.
It was
no, I know that, but what I'm trying to say is, in my terrible way, is that's another point of the chess match. You know, those the Chiefs. I don't want to say they wanted it more, but every play is 150% in that game, and that's what I saw from the Chiefs, 150%. And you're right, John Spagnuolo. We have not heard of him at all over the last 5-10 years as a coaching candidate. Do you think because it's too late now, but do you think because of this game, if he has another solid year, we finally hear? Did he was a failure as a head coach, if I remember correctly. Terrible record with the Giants, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't the Giants. It was the Eagles, I think, that he went to.
He was
the DC for the Giants when they won the Super Bowls, but – listen, look, he may be like Wink Martindale. Wink Martindale was always happy just being a defensive coordinator for the most part. Some people just don't want to be head coaches. You know, it dominates your life. It destroys your family for the most part. And so maybe he just doesn't want to be a head coach anymore, because I think he would have gotten some opportunities if he just made it known, like his agent made it known he's available. I just think he doesn't like it. And the other thing I want to say is, before I get off it, is the kickers. I don't know if you guys realize, but we had, I think it's the first time where consecutive Super Bowl records for the longest field goal made were done in the same
time. Yes, that's right. That's right.
Moody hit 55, I think. 55. And then Buckter hit 57, right? So when you think about it, the kickers also played a huge part in this game, and for the most part came through. The missed extra point is sort of regrettable, I think, for Moody, because I think he's too good of a kicker to have that on his stain on his career right now. But for some weird reason, I don't think too many people view that as costing them the game. You know, because the game was still tied. It did change the dynamic 100%. But
completely changed it.
Score a touchdown instead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Take it to overtime. Yeah. No, so that was critical in that sense. I mean, it doesn't matter. We know Patrick Mahomes. What's that?
Special teams did matter.
No. I'm not disagreeing. I'm agreeing. I'm saying it forced them to going an extra 20 yards for that TD is much different, no matter what.
Agreed.
Because nothing's ever
agreed.
A given, you agreed. Know. And I think Spagnuolo, it was the St. Louis Rams.
Oh, it was the Rams. Okay, yeah, I knew. He was still the defensive coordinator when he was in Philly, but yeah, you're right. It was the Rams. I got that wrong. But you know that special.
Yeah. And Jimmy Johnson left his wife. Because he was a head coach and wanted to vote full time to the Cowboys. Right.
I was going to say that wasn't really a muffed punt, because it hit the leg of one of the blockers.
First. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, it hit the leg of the blocker.
Oh, it did. Okay.
That's why he started freaking out. It actually hit one of his own teammates on the back of the leg.
That's why he went after it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. He had to. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I have one more question, but before I get to that final question, Greg, your final thoughts on this Super Bowl.
Well, I said it was boring. That's the first three quarters. I thought the first three quarters really didn't show the capabilities of either team. The 49ers looked much better than the Chiefs did, but they couldn't put it away. And I agree
with
John. They should have kept running the ball. I mean, because the Chiefs were not stopping the run.
I agree with that. Again, that's where I come in question. Is it true? I did not go back and look at the stats, but did they run in the third quarter? I thought I read it in an article, saw a headline that McCaffrey didn't touch the ball in the third quarter.
Oh, he touched the ball. He had to, because he had so
many. No, I'm talking about from a rushing aspect, from a running aspect,
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. John, your final thoughts on the game before I ask my final question.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was an entertaining game, like I said. I think last week, someone can go watch the previous episode. I said I thought it would be 24-21 Chiefs, so I'm kind of happy at my prediction, because I was only off by a point on both cycles.
Yeah.
I had the Chiefs on the money line, so because I knew they were going to win, so made some money on that. And I had the under, because I think we all agreed it was going to be a low-scoring game. The under was under 47.5, and they came up at 47. So
I said
Big John,
31-20.
You said 31-20, yeah.
But I think I said like 35-38 or something like that.
Eddie and I. Then it was me and Eddie. But had the under on that game too. So like I said, it was pretty profitable. I had two player props, and both of them busted on me. One was that Chris Jones would get one sack. And, of course, that last play, I thought, it's coming through. But then Purdy managed to get rid of it at the last moment. And I had Kelce for a touchdown. And I'm surprised he didn't get into the end zone. But overall, it was a good game, and I enjoyed it. I mean, it goes into overtime. You got to love it. Like, I mean, maybe I'll give some credence to those QAnon nuts that said the whole NFL season is scripted from the beginning, right?
Yeah, I saw it. I didn't even bother to look at that. Real quick, John, though, who were the happiest people that it went into overtime, for Greg or John, either one? Who were the happiest people in the world that the game went into overtime?
The network.
Yeah. That's right. The network. The network.
Advertisers.
Exactly.
I don't even know. Well, the
network's going to the advertisers. They're the ones getting the money. So, real quick, my final question to both of you is, I'm sorry. One more question. I lied. What did you think of Travis Kelce on the sideline with Andy Reid, that blow up? I thought he was just doing it for show. I am Taylor Swift's girlfriend. I am the man of the season right now. And I've never seen him do that before. Just do it out of the blue. What are your thoughts?
I thought he wanted the ball to be thrown to him, and it wasn't being thrown to him.
The first
five red zone plays, three runs, a field goal, and a pass to somebody not named Kelce.
Okay. No, I don't think it was fake at all.
I think it was fake.
No, because
I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just tossing
I know you're tossing it out there. You're trying to be a little controversial. I think he was I think he really got pissed because the first half he was a ghost. Like, you didn't hear his name called. You didn't
one
see
catch,
any
1 yard.
Yeah,
and you know what though? You know, gentlemen, this is what I talk about. Every play is critical. Every adjustment is critical. This happened against the Ravens too. And the Chiefs suggested, look, Andy Reid was Marty Schottenheimer 2.0. I always knew until he could get a quarterback. I never thought I know it's terrible. I know people argue hindsight's 2020, but I always thought Donovan McNabb was a little soft and wouldn't be able to get the Eagles over the hump. But once he got Mahomes, we are truly seeing Andy Reid showcasing he's one of the greatest play callers. I mean, I've had the best game here, but he made enough adjustments and defensively because he's got to trust his coordinator. You know, he wasn't calling timeout to go, that's a bad play. You know, so I think we're seeing the eminence grow of Andy Reid. And honestly, I never thought about it until we just had this discussion. Bill Belichick, you know, the most wins. I think Andy Reid has a shot at that. I don't know if he'll play that long. I don't know if his heart will last that long. He's a big man. But I think with this team and his coaching ability, he could very well break that. Is it Don Shula who still has a record? Yeah, it's still Don Shula, right? The most wins in NFL?
I don't remember. But Belichick lucked into Tom Brady.
I agree with you, Greg.
Was a six-round pick.
I agree.
Belichick was an average coach.
Greg, I've been calling him Loser Belichick, not out of spite, but out of fact. Without Tom Brady, before and after, he's got a loser's record. And that's what I mean by I think Andy Reid is heads and tails above him. So my final question to you guys is, we've talked about the Niners a lot. John says we've got it spoiled, and to a degree, you're right. I don't look at it he's got it spoiled, but it's easy to fall into that trap because I didn't realize until you said that. I have fallen into that trap. They're just so good. However, going into the offseason, you're the owner or the team president, and you're looking at the coaching staff and the management staff, general manager, what's going through your mind in the sense of what has to change, what needs to happen for them to get over the hump for the Super Bowl? We'll start with John.
You mean the 49ers specifically?
Yes, sir.
I think they don't change a thing. I think they work on that offensive line if they can. I mean, look, John Lynch to me is one of the top three or four GMs in football. I think what he's been able to do there is amazing. They need to figure out that offensive line. Trent Williams isn't getting any younger. I mean, I don't know if you guys noticed, he was limping the whole game. Every time
he went in and
out of the huddle, he was limping. He was playing on hard alone. Feliciano got hurt in that game, the guard. I think he's the left guard. So, listen, that line needs some work. You know, they still have a great window. Purdy, he had a great game. He had an almost flawless game for the Niners. We haven't mentioned Purdy's name at all much this conversation. He had a fantastic game, Purdy. Fantastic game, especially considering he's a second-year player on the biggest stage in football, right? So they've got a good young quarterback. They still have McCaffrey, Samuel, Ayuk. Jennings showed me a lot of wide receiver. Kittle's getting a little bit older, but he's still, you know, he can still get 1,000 yards. I think they need to focus on that offensive line. Defensively, I still think they're good. I mean, I don't think it takes much more than one or two players just to restock, maybe get some depth, like to your point, William. But I think the main focus should be the offensive line. Keep Purdy upright, open up those holes for McCaffrey, and you'll be in the NFC champion again. You'll be in the championship game again, probably next year. I think there's very little to tinker with on that team. I think they probably run the risk of making changes that actually go in the wrong direction. Yeah. You know, I think they have a good thing right there. At least for another two seasons, I think they've still got a good window.
Real quick, Ray, before you go, San Fran got the Mahomes three times. The Chiefs got the Purdy one time. Just we asked that question. Yeah, we didn't know if he was sacked. What's your thoughts, Greg?
I agree with John. They need to fix the offensive line. I also think they need to get a good backup middle linebacker, clearly.
Exactly.
And coming off an Achilles, you just don't know how Greenlaw is going to respond. So I think
he's older now, isn't he?
Huh?
Isn't he a little older now?
Well, he's younger than Warner, but he has been injury prone this year. Like, he popped a hammy once or twice. He's always coming out at the second half. Like, he plays recklessly. That's part of his problem. Like, he doesn't know how to let up on a tackle. If you see him play, he plays violently. Like, he reminds me of Ray Lewis a little bit, not in talent, but in the way he approaches the game. And, like, I don't think he's ever lightened up on a tackle. He's knocked himself out just as often as he knocks out ball carriers. So I think that's part of his problem. And players like that will end up
linebacker. Yeah.
What was that?
Hence the need for another linebacker.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, guys, I did want to mention one thing. There's a great YouTube video short with Jason Kelce and his kids, and they're talking about Uncle Travie won. You didn't win, Dad. Uncle Travie won. And Jason is going, well, let's be happy for Uncle Travie. So I recommend everybody see it. It's cute as hell.
I'll check it out. So Dre Greenlaw has been in the league 5 seasons. And with somebody who plays that violently, he's probably nearing the end. People always assume 10, 12 years, but the average lifespan is still 3 to 5 years
of an
NFL player.
Usually.
Yeah. No. I'm not saying he's not going to last time, but what I'm saying is he plays violently like that, you know, all these injuries. Anyway, I agree with both of you. If I'm the CEO or the team president, whatever, first of all, I sit Shanahan and I'm sorry, the GM, I'm drawing a blank, Jake football player,
Lynch
down, and I specifically talk about the defensive coordinator. Your guys' decision. Do we need to make a change, or do we just need continuity there since he's our third defensive coordinator in 3 years? You explore that question. But I agree they need depth, and they do need a middle linebacker on defense. But they need to fix the offensive line. Their problem is that offensive line. It's been – and Shanahan has noted this, and he says that's why – one reason they look at Brock Purdy differently than the rest of the league, because they see those little nuances, and they see how, you know, how he's adapting to the quicker rush, to this, to that. But that – if they have a problem that they need to address, it's the offensive line. Their secondary problem is they need depth on defense, and then you also got to look at Lynch and ask Lynch, do we need to bring an offensive coordinator? That's maybe the same type of offensive coordinator that Shanahan is, but maybe Shanahan needs to start looking at it from a head coaching standpoint instead of the head coach slash play caller. You know, I don't know. What I'm saying is, as a CEO, those are the questions I'm asking going into the offseason. Now, do you guys think the Chiefs can – I lied again. The final question, do you guys think the Chiefs can three-peat?
It's hard. It's hard to two-peat.
I'm not going to say this term, but
predictions that next year's Super Bowl is going to be Detroit and KC.
Is that from QAnon?
It's from the person who predicted 49ers and KC this year.
But that's you. I take it.
Bottom line is Detroit's kept their staff, which I didn't expect them to do. I thought Ben Johnson would be gone. And, you know, if you look at what Brad Holmes has done with his drafts, every player, he's taken 21 players in 3 years. And I think 21. Anyway, all but one are still with the team on the roster. That's kind of unheard of.
And Greg, do you think they have, but do they have the draft picks or the salary cap space to fix that?
To fix that
secondary, because that secondary was really their Achilles heel. They're ranked 31 to 32 all season long.
Just remember, if whoever it was, I think it was Seattle picked just before Detroit at 5 last year, and they took Devin Witherspoon, cornerback. Detroit was going to take him. That's why they traded down and got Jahmyr Gibbs. Now, I love the Gibbs pick, but Devin Witherspoon would have gone a long way. They got this new kid, Ifeanyi, I don't remember his last name. He's one of the draft picks of Brad Holmes. He played really well at the end of this year.
Yeah, I can't pronounce
his last name.
So you're saying,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I can't pronounce that kid's name, but it's number six, the safety.
He played really well.
And Branch was out. The other rookie they had who was good, he was hurt for a lot of the season, too. Can the Chiefs?
Well, hold on, John. So you're saying it's going to be Detroit from the NFC is what I'm hearing, Greg.
Well, I'm saying somebody predicted it. I would love to see it as a Detroit fan, but it's hard. It's really hard. There just aren't dynasties anymore.
Right.
Now, with Mahomes, Casey has as good a chance as anybody of getting back. But if Pacheco goes down with an injury, Jerick McKinnon's injury prone, I just don't see it's going to be hard for the Chiefs to get back.
No, and, I agree.
I think it's hard for Detroit to get back. There's a lot of good teams in the NFL.
And don't forget, Travis Kelce's another year older. He wasn't injured this year as much as he had those knickknacks that kind of just wear on you. Yeah,
but
he may still, but
like
the VP.
To come back.
Yeah. Yeah, John, your take. Do you think the Niners are able to get back to it?
The Niners? Yeah, they have a
Niners.
Shot. Yeah, the Niners have a shot.
I'm sorry, that wasn't my question. My question was the three-peat. I'm sorry, I lost track there.
Can they do a three-peat? Look, the odds against it are against it, but I will say this. I think Kansas City is going to be even better next year. So the defense is very young. So they'll be matured, and they'll still be as good probably. Spagnuolo's going to be there, so you have continuity that you mentioned. Defensive coordinator, great defense. Chris Jones may or may not be back, but, you know, they've been building up the talent around him. The thing that needs to get fixed is you need more playmakers, whether it's getting another running back, whether it's getting what I think is a true number one receiver. I think Rice showed me that he was getting better as the year progressed. But I don't think he's like a game-changing number one. You get someone like Tyreek Hill in there, whether it's a free agent, whether it's through the draft, whatever it is, get somebody in there who's a true number one, and we'll have no doubt saying that the Chiefs could be a favorite to three-peat because Mahomes is the best quarterback. It's an old formula. NFL changes, but it's an old formula. Best quarterback and a great defense means you always have a chance to win. So I think they have a shot at it. They have a shot. I mean, look.
They're the only team in the NFL right now who can do it.
Right, right.
And
right, and you know what? Look, it's been 20 years. This is the first back-to-back Super Bowl winner since 2004. So it's been 20 years.
Parity and attrition. My take is simple. I think the Chiefs can three-peat. However, if you put a gun in my head, I'd say no, and here's why. Both of you guys are right. But I've been saying all season long, Detroit is a year away. Baltimore is a year away. Those are the two most physical teams in the league. Well, maybe a couple others. But that smash mouth, especially with Baltimore. And the reason I say that is somebody on Twitter said, you idiot, Lamar's been in the league like 7 years, something like that. And my take was this is his first year in a passing offense that was built for him to showcase his arm. So he's still learning that process. So I think I'm not saying the Chiefs win was a fluke win. I'm saying the Chiefs outcoached the Ravens, outcoached staff. And that's why the Chiefs advanced. They were smarter, better. They were the better team in all phases. But I think Baltimore is the better team on the field, but can they make that transition? Maybe, maybe not. And then, you like I said, the Lions are just a few players away from the secondary, and they've got a coach who has bloodlust in his eyes. And I say that in a very good way. He is a coach I would follow into battle and fall on my sword for, Dan Campbell. Kyle Shanahan is the coach I'm like, damn, we're going to war, man. Statistically, I may not come back. But with Dan Campbell, I don't care if I don't come back. And that's the difference in managing and leadership. Now, Dan Campbell needs to mature as a leader a bit, too, and understand the intricacies and nuances of the play in the context it's in. Ergo, look at the Dallas
game. It's okay to kick on fourth down once in a while.
Exactly, exactly. But there's one more power team in the AFC, guys, and I'm drawing a complete
blank. Well, there's
blank
two more that you missed. There's two more. There's the Bills. Buffalo. There's the Bills.
Yeah, that's it. The Bills.
And then Miami, because
Miami's too much of a finesse team.
Hold on a second. Again, people forget. Their defense was terrorizing opposing offensive But then what did they do? They lost Jalen Phillips, who was an amazing
pass rusher. All season long, John. They dealt with injuries.
Yeah, and then they also lost Bradley Chubb. So when you think about it, they lost something like 25 sacks when those two guys went down, right? And they put relentless pressure. So, yeah, and also they didn't have Jalen Ramsey the whole season. So that defense, when you take all those injuries into account, and everybody has to deal with injuries, but those guys are coming back next season, I think.
John, you're right. You're right. I used to tell Eddie this. I said, Eddie, nobody's talking about this. I can't find any articles. But the freaking Dolphins are ravaged on defense injury-wise. Yeah. And I go, we're not seeing any articles because their offense is so dominant. That's all anybody wants to talk about. But I kept saying, I do my write-ups. These injuries are going to catch them up. My issue with the Dolphins is Tua's arm and some of his decision-making. It's a big playbook. He's still learning it. John pointed this out. Tua can get the ball to the receivers. There's no doubt in that. But too many times, I see Grace giving me this dotty face, but too many times I agree with John, those receivers, they'd be like slowing down to let the ball catch up to them. And this is what I tell people. I predicted this with the St. Louis Rams when they lost to the Patriots in Brady's rookie year. I go, look, you've got to be able to make the tough play in the close games. And when you get away with stuff like that, it catches up to you when you're facing elite teams. And that's my concern with Tua, is when the big game came along, they couldn't keep up. They couldn't even match up with Kansas City. Then Buffalo beat them twice. So they've got to – I think they're a couple years away, and I think Tua may not be their ultimate if they get in the playoffs in 3 to 5 years, Tua may not be the quarterback leading them there. Greg, go ahead. You're dying to say it.
Any quarterback in the NFL, I don't care how good their arm is going to underthrow the ball to those two receivers sometimes. They're just that fast.
Oh, but it wasn't sometimes. John would point that out. It was all the time.
Greg.
Because I was with you, Greg, and John kept on. And eventually, covering the games every week, I'm like, damn, another underthrow. And that's what finally got me was too many underthrows.
I think what Baltimore and Miami need is a good running back. And by a good running back, I mean a guy that goes between the tackles. I love the Miami running backs, but they're scat backs. They're small guys.
Right. I brought that up too. Yep, agreed.
And I like Gus Edwards, but he doesn't have the speed required for a top-notch running back in Baltimore. I think if Dobbins could have stayed healthy, he could have been the guy for him, but he was injured all the time. So both of those teams need a solid running back before I think they contend for the Super Bowl. I really do.
Gotcha.
I actually James Cook in Buffalo. I think he's pretty good.
He matured this year, and more importantly.
Yeah, you guys liked him? I wasn't that impressed, but then I didn't follow him that closely.
Well, here's the thing. They got rid of, who was it? Who was the offensive
Ken
coordinator?
Dorsey.
They got rid of him.
Right.
Who was the guy they hired
Brady.
Midseason? Brady.
Wasn't it Brady, something Brady, yeah.
Joe Brady, I think. Whoever that OC was that took over midseason, he turned that offense around. And the first thing he did was, we're getting the ball to James Cook. And if you notice, that's when Stephon Diggs started bitching more, because now he wasn't the center of attention anymore.
That's right.
On offense, right?
But they were winning.
And like when you said, I had Cook on two or three of my fantasy teams, so
he
would see.
Good.
Yeah, that second half, it was like, boom. Why? He was getting 18, 19, 17 carries a game, which he wasn't getting before.
And three or four receptions.
Exactly. Right. And he would get three, four passes thrown his way. He would get 120 total scrimmage yards a game. And all of a sudden you're like, wait a second. Now Josh Allen isn't running for his life anymore. He isn't always taking the quarterback sneak on third and one, third and two. They've got James Cook for that. And I thought Latavius Murray was a good change-up for them. So he could come in and get that tough yard that Greg is talking about. So the Bills, now can they retain everybody? That's the other issue, right? I don't know.
Well, getting rid of Von Miller would give him some salary cap relief.
Right, and it depends what you think of their offense, right? Their defense. Milano was out, everything. So the AFC is by far –
Well, their defense had injuries too.
The AFC is by far the superior conference, in my opinion, right? So it's like you could say the Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, Dolphins, Bills,
Bengals,
you know,
Bengals,
you know, you get back
They'll
Joe
back
Burrow
back
healthy.
Burrow, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, I mean, you're, that, six, seven teams in the AFC, you can make a legitimate argument that they can represent Correct. The AFC. In the NFC, it's the Niners. I don't even know if the Eagles can be counted in there anymore because they just went totally down the crapper this season. Who knows what's going to happen? And they're always – but, see, Roseman always makes one a trade somewhere that you don't expect. But it's like who are we talking about in the NFC? The Niners?
Cowboys and Niners.
Maybe the Cowboys. Maybe the Cowboys.
I'm talking about in terms of talent. And I don't take them seriously, but they are talented.
And the Lions.
Don't miss my team.
And the Lions. No, I was getting to them.
There you go.
And the Lions. So you've only got maybe two to four teams that you can make an argument to win the Super Bowl. So the Chiefs, A, it's just against the odds to win three in a row. The second thing is they play in the tougher division. You know, it's the same thing like if you're the Jets in the AFC East or the Patriots. What are your chances of winning division? Next to zero, no matter how much you improve, because you've got Buffalo and Miami ahead of you. In the AFC, it's the same thing. You've got to jump over Baltimore. Look, I don't know, still don't know what happened in that Baltimore game. They should have throttled the Chiefs, but they didn't.
No, you're right, but that's great coaching. To me, that's the difference maker was the coaching. Guys, real quick, before I close the show out, I'm going to give my take. I think the Niners can make it back. I don't think the Chiefs will, not because they're something happened to them. It's the growth of some of the other teams. But the only reason I would put the Niners over the Lions is they have a rookie salary cap situation with Brock Purdy, so they can fill some depths while they're writing that rookie contract. And that's one of my fears about the Ravens. You know, with Lamar with this big contract, it's going to limit. Now, people say, oh, William, they work around it. No, they don't. They play their little tricks. They play their little game. They can get away with it here or there, but they don't have full-fledged an open table. Now, that said, per Greg, the Lions have a great salary cap. So that means, to me, it can boil down to one of those teams, because I just think the Cowboys are too soft when it comes to crunch time, and nobody can prove me wrong. They become soft and lose, the teams they should be. So I do believe it'll come down to the NFC, to the Lions and the Niners in terms of that. Maybe the Eagles, depending on how their coordinators do. What's that?
I think Green Bay is a good team, too. I really do.
They're what you call the dark horse, but there's now a lot of film. And again, dude, I mean, it's like I look at my analysis, and everything fell into line. And that's why I get so mad at people on Twitter. I'm like, no, I was watching them. Like Jordan Love, I said, he's growing. They're going to suck early. You know, so certain things. It's like the Lions. The only thing that disappointed me with the Lions was their lack of an ability to put their foot on their opponent's neck and snap it like a twig when they were in command. Because they let certain teams play. At times, they would play down to their opponents. And that's just a maturing process, you know. Gentlemen, actually, I lied. Any final words, Greg or John, before we log it off?
Thanks for having me on. It's great being with you guys again.
Great having John? You, Greg. I'm cool. John, I'll shut up.
Okay. Greg, it was a pleasure. I'm hoping we can bring you on a semi-regular basis just to talk football, because you bring the passion and energy out. So we'll talk about that later, but we enjoyed having you on the last 2 weeks. Good analysis, good debate. And for the rest of the audience, we'll be here next week. Points on the board. Again, do not forget, grumbliesmedia.com. You can find all our podcasts. Greg, go ahead.
Try to get to the Fantasy Football Expo in Canton in August, 9th through the 11th. I don't know if John and William will be there, but I will, and I hope to see them there too. It's a great time. Bob Lung puts on a great show there.
Yeah, no, I agree, Greg. In fact, if I remember correctly, Bob and John are kind of tight. No comment.
Bob used to write for me for one season, I believe. Yeah, so I know Bob.
Yeah, there you go. So to everybody else, again, grumbliesmedia.com. You can check out our shows, YouTube, Rumble, under the profile, Grumblies Media, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, and Google for your traditional podcast. Greg, once again, thank you for having us. Big John, thanks for filling in and being part of it. And to Mr. Eddie Aparicio, you should have been here to take your loves. But it's a special day for Eddie. He's out with the family. God bless him, and I hope he has a good night. To everybody else, this is William Del Pilar.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh.
Oh, tomorrow. Happy Valentine's Day. And to everybody else, I'm William Del Pilar with Points on the Board. Until next time, I bid you adieu.